the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, welcome along to the FWA podcast for another week. This week, I'm delighted to say that we've got Jim Van Wyk from the Press Association, also an FWA National Committee member, on the line to talk about the Champions League, look forward to the Premier League, and touch on Alan Pardew's punishment. Morning, Jim. You well?
Yes, sir. Very well. Very well.
You've had a trip over to Germany in the week. Before we get on to the Champions League and Man City and Arsenal's demise this week, tell us a little bit about the Press Association. Anyone who works within the industry knows what, you know, a vital job that you do with your colleagues, but some people listening might not be aware of the Press Association, how much material that's in the tabloid or in the broadsheets actually comes from PA.
Well, yeah, we're the national news agency for the UK and Ireland, and basically we send reporters all around Europe and to the major events all around the world to serve the Wire, which has subscription services both from the national newspapers, regional newspapers, television, internet services, and then the people are able to put that content on their website in their newspaper, and as you say, it goes all over the all over the globe, and sometimes you're looking for your stories there, and you think, "Oh, did I write that one?" And it's popped up maybe in Belfast, or people have been to Australia and said, "Oh, look, I've seen your Arsenal story in the local Sydney newspaper." So I guess the easiest way for people to look at it is if you imagine, say, a local newspaper based down in Essex where I live, they're not going to be able to resource to send somebody out to cover the England game. We will go and cover the England game. We'll provide that service to them. So then it goes back to those. And also for national newspapers, sometimes when they're not able to get along somewhere, then they can rely on Press Association's fast, fair, and accurate copy to get the story over to them.
There we go. Good sales pitch. that's what it was. It wasn't that. It was just I just wondered if everyone knew how it all worked.
If anyone out there, if they want to have a look, just Google Jim Van Wyk and Arsenal, and you'll probably see my stuff all over the shop. Sometimes with a credit, sometimes with not. But that kind of gives you an idea of where our copy goes. Sort of all over the place and all over the world. And obviously now we're in a 24/7 media environment, so the PA is constantly updating stories as I go along for all of our customers all across their different digital platforms, which is so important now in modern media.
And as I mentioned, Jim's been over to Germany to watch Arsenal in Europe. The first leg away wins proved too much to overturn for all four clubs this midweek: Milan, Leverkusen, Man City and Arsenal, all having a bit of a go, to be fair, all scoring goals. Let's start with Arsenal though, Jim, since that's the game you went to. It was just a bit too much to bite off, wasn't it? I mean, if they could have replicated what they did last year, they would have taken it to extra time, but just couldn't get that early goal this time round. I suppose a creditable performance, and the interesting thing is, when you look at Bayern Munich, that got this sensational home record. Well, actually, Arsenal get them to a draw this year, obviously beat them 2-0 last year. Man City beat them 3-2 at the end of the group stage. I think Chelsea drew 2-2 in the Super Cup, didn't they? They've got a bit of a thing against about English clubs. If only we could do it at home.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the first leg was key to that. We don't want to go over it again, but how costly was that Ozil penalty in the first leg? Arsenal absolutely came out firing, the first 10 minutes there. Someone did make a good point, though. Now, Ozil's not the designated penalty taker. Arsene Wenger made the decision not to play Giroud. Maybe would Giroud have rolled that one in? But then, of course, you had the sending off, and I do agree with Arsene Wenger on that one, and it did change the whole dynamic of the tie. And maybe that's the double jeopardy penalty that the powers that be need to look at. But from there, I think what probably really killed the tie was not the fact that Arsenal lost it. I just think it was that second goal so late on. I mean, if they'd gone out to Germany with just a 1-0 deficit, I think they would have still been very much more in the tie. But it was kind of a difficult one to gauge for Bayern, because a bit like last season, they kind of knew the tie was over anyway. So you don't know whether if Bayern needed to find that second gear, they could have done. And as you said, Liam, and had that early goal gone in for Arsenal, then, you know, maybe we would have seen a different game. But, you know, credit to the Gunners. You know, they went out there, and Podolski certainly enjoyed himself against his old side, although I think it was a little bit fortunate to get away with the foul. And then, of course, afterwards, it was kind of all overshadowed by Arsene Wenger's comments about Aaron Robben, which, I can understand where he's coming from on that. Certainly from the first challenge with Carsola, there was no contact. The second one with Koscielny, it was minimal, but you know that certainly in Europe that's still enough to give a penalty. Whether Robin makes a meal of it or not, that's neither here nor there, is it? But I do agree with what the manager said. If you know, Robin is given a yellow card for the dive, which he was in the first instance, then, you know, maybe he thinks twice about doing the second one. But another gallant exit for the Gunners, but just goes to show how important it would have been to try and win that group, you know, because then you, the same with Manchester City, really, then you avoid that, you know, the prospect of facing one of the leading sides until you make the last eight.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I suppose the more facetious people would say they can concentrate on getting into the Champions League again now. Although obviously the FA Cup is looming large for them. Manchester City, similar story, really, wasn't it? I mean, when you saw the interviews with Vincent Kompany afterwards, seldom do you see a player still that exhausted on the TV after a game. You know, you don't often see them still visibly sweating and still visibly out of breath. I mean, he was the epitome of a captain last night, and it's just a shame that he was on the losing side, and a shame they couldn't go through. But again, a refereeing decision cost him in the first leg, and a refereeing decision, you could argue, cost him in the second leg as well.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those, isn't it? Again, I mean, did we really see the true Manchester City? You know, in this tie, everyone build it up. You know, Manchester City against, you know, Barcelona. Barcelona are more vulnerable now than they've ever been, which I think is the case. But again, they were just not able to recover, and for some reason, you know, the big stars, we've seen it, you know, week in, week out in the Premier League, they've been able to produce. Just for some reason, you know, they weren't able to, you know, they weren't able to produce this performance again. I can understand what people are saying as well about, you know, referees' decisions, but this is something you have to cope with in Europe. Arsene Wenger was talking about before the game about, you know, the referees being very careful about, you know, what he said, obviously in light of the Pellegrini comments. But in Europe, referees will give fouls and see things completely different than they do in the Premier League. And is it maybe that our players just have to get smarter when they play in Europe to realise, look, I can't play a similar type of physical game that I do in the Premier League because our referees are more likely to let the game flow? Or do we need to say to our referees, look, referee every Premier League game like you would a Champions League final? But if you do that, are you then going to end up with 3, 4, 5 players sent off every week?
Yeah.
You know, we saw the problems Howard Webb had, didn't he, in the World Cup final. And, you know, people could have argued that, you know, there should have been a lot more. But again, with City, you could say probably, you know, was the game over after the first leg? You know, were they ever going to go to the new camp and turn that over? And, you know, as you said, the red card for Zabaleta, well, there's not much, you know, there's not much you can do as a manager. I think Pellegrini would have been pulling his hoodie off, wouldn't he, when he sees stuff like that. But again, City through the group, in a group with Bayern Munich, that was always going to be tough for them to qualify ahead of Bayern Munich. But then, you know, this is the kind of the issue that they have, that with all of the money that they're able to spend domestically, they're still not quite able to make that breakthrough, you know, into Europe, which is what you feel, you know, the powers that be probably look at. Will that change next season? I mean, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because City, are they going to be among the top seeds? Unlikely. There's a situation which could well arise, say if Manchester United and Chelsea don't both progress, that would then have an impact on the Premier League's coefficient, you know, going forward. And if that trend continues of English clubs failing to make the, you know, the quarterfinals and the semi-finals, you could develop a situation where only 3 clubs qualify for the Champions League, and then that would obviously have a detrimental impact on the, you know, on the Premier League and how tough the race is at the top. So it's but I don't think we should be too negative about about those performances, because there were signs in there that both Arsenal and Manchester City, when everything is going right, when they're all on form, then they can compete against these guys. But it's just been able to get that consistency in Europe, and so far probably the only one of the four who've been able to show that at Chelsea, and it'll be interesting to see how they get on next week and if they can progress, and obviously Manchester United seeing it, whether they can overturn that deficit. And I think there's still life in that tie. I'd be surprised if United don't at least maybe try to take that one to extra time. So yes, a disappointing week this week for English clubs in Europe, but by no means the end of the road yet for that European adventure this season, I don't think.
Just on Man City, I mean, obviously they've spent an awful lot of money. We all know that, and obviously a lot is expected of this club because they've spent so much money, which is understandable. But they've been in the Champions League for 3 years now, Jim. It's a steady progress. They're not pulling up any trees, really. You could say that, argue they've been unlucky this season with the way the draw went and everything else, and the group they got put in. But they've progressed this season. You can't argue with that. I know I'm being a bit old fashioned here, but is there anything wrong with just slowly building and working your way into that competition? It's almost better than international football when you speak to some top players. I mean, is there anything wrong with the way they're doing it? I mean, next year if they get to the semi-finals, the following year if they manage to get to the final, the following year if they manage to win it, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? That's called building something.
No, absolutely. Unfortunately, do the paymasters see it that way? Do they want instant success? Do they say, well, you've had £300 million, financial fair play is now starting to kick in, so we're not going to get any more, so, off you go. I mean, there was all talk at the start of the season they were going to win the quadruple, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden,
it was about 33-1 about a month ago.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, you can do I don't want to call it the second rate double, but I will. You can still win the league, and obviously they've won. They won the League Cup, which in itself is not, is an achievement, and can be the building block. But absolutely, there's no reason why you can't say, right, Manchester City, they qualified for the Champions League first. That was the most difficult thing, because their seeding wasn't there. They were always going to get tough groups. They got out of a very tough group, as Arsenal did. Napoli, Dortmund and Arsenal, did exceptionally well to even, to even get out of that group.
Yeah.
Manchester City managed to get out of the group, as you say, and then they were always just going to be playing the lottery of the draw, weren't they, whoever they picked up. But, there's no doubt, they're the leading side in the Premier League, and, people would say, they're the best that, English football has to offer, and yet they're coming up against, top quality opposition in Europe, and they're not quite able to make the transition. But as you say, this season, second round, next season, why not quarterfinals? Season after that, semi-finals. But will Pellegrini be given the time that Mancini wasn't to slowly start to build this, or will the powers that be say, well, I'm sorry, yes, you've won the League Cup, yes, you challenged for the Premier League, whether they're going to eventually get ahead of Chelsea. I think there's a little bit of life in there, a little bit of value still in Chelsea's challenge. That remains to be seen. But as you said, it's about progress, but how patient will people be to see this progress? How patient will the fans be? If you say to Manchester City fans, are you happy with progress there, or should you be going to Barcelona? Should you have ripped Barcelona apart 3-4-0 like you do when some of these English teams come to the Etihad, and should you have just gone to Barcelona and turned over that deficit? I mean, Aguero went missing again, didn't he? There's something interesting there. Aguero, odds will underperformed again. I know he had his injury issue, but if you look at that lineup, Toure, Fernandinho, Silva, Aguero, Deco coming off the bench and having all those sorts of problems. There was that key period in the game, wasn't it, where you thought if Manchester City can just get a goal here, then they can probably start to maybe turn the tide around. But it just didn't happen. And then what's that chap's name? Mr. Messi popped up again, didn't he?
He's all right.
Yeah, he's not bad.
He's not bad.
He might get in the City lineup. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's not bad if you're thinking. Some people were suggesting, judging by his, I mean, you know, you can never really question a Messi performance, but some people were saying that he seems to be in fourth gear because he's got his eye on the World Cup. Mm. You know, well, I'd take that any day of the week. The odds for the Champions League: Bayern Munich are the standalone favourites at 7-4. Barcelona 7-2. Real Madrid are 4-1. Obviously bigger than Barcelona because they are actually through. But Real Madrid pretty much through. 4-1 looks. If you give me Barcelona or Real Madrid, you know, and Real Madrid are half a point bigger, then I'll take them. Thank you very much. PSG 10-1. They got through, and of course have got a fantastic team of stars, including that man Ibrahimovic, who could win any game on his own. Atletico Madrid 12-1, and they look very good getting past a faded AC Milan. Then Chelsea 12-1. Dortmund, last year's finalist, 16-1. Man United 40-1. Then the really big prices for the rest: Olympiacos 150, Galatasaray 200, 1,000-1 for Zenit, and 5,000-1 for Schalke. Who wins it, Jim, from this stage?
Well, that's you've got to be impressed with what with what Bayern Munich have done. I think there's, I'm still not maybe convinced that being so far ahead of the Bundesliga, we should read too much into that. Because how strong are the the challenges how strong are the challenges they face every week? I think still there's a bit of a debate about there, but they continue to produce the goods in Europe. Pep Guardiola was talking down the prospects of being able to retain the trophy, which has proved too difficult for everybody everybody so far. Real Madrid, they absolutely murdered Schalke, didn't they, in the last round? So I think a lot of it is obviously going to come. It's going to become in the draw, isn't it? It's a free draw from the quarterfinals. So potentially you could get Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, or perhaps even Barcelona, Bayern Munich, and one of those knock the other one out. But I you mentioned their sort of Paris Saint Germain. They're kind of going about things. Quite well, I suppose, apart from Mr. Ibrahimovic, who's never quiet about anything, is he? Did you see with his back heel flick the other week, which has been going over YouTube? I mean, I think there's probably a bit of value in there, but I think there still could be some value, in these two English clubs that are left. I mean, you said they, Manchester United, 40-1. I mean, that's that's especially sort of for if you're looking at each way price, maybe. I mean, this could be. The competition now that United, if they can overturn that deficit against Olympiacos, it could be the watershed moment, for David Moyes, showing that the quality is still there within the squad. That more importantly, that the belief is there within the squad that they can get that result. And it's just for argument's sake, they get maybe a more favourable quarter final draw if they can get past Olympiacos, say maybe Madrid or possibly Dortmund, avoid one of the big boys. All of a sudden, you're in the semi final, and who knows what could happen there. So I think probably the dream final isn't everybody would want to see is probably Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, but I wouldn't rule out one of the English sides just maybe sneaking in there into that into that final at Lisbon. And I mean, certainly the way Chelsea have been set up this season, I watched them down at Fulham when there was a bit of worry about with the jet lag, and would that have caused a problem? And although they were a little bit lacklustre, they still found a way to win, and that's what they've been doing all season. And even though Jose is very clever in trying to deflect the tension away from his side, and quite rightly so, saying Manchester City's still in the driving seat. If they win all their games, they're going to be top. Chelsea just seem to have that knack of pulling out the result when they need to, don't they? I mean, he got his tactics spot on when he went to Manchester City. And you feel if Jose had to go somewhere like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, his tactics would be spot on again. So what were their odds, about 10, 12?
12-1. 12-1. That's probably one of the better bets, isn't it?
That's not a bad value bet.
Same as Atletico Madrid at 12-1. But you probably would favour... I mean, Atletico looked better, but there's a bit of word from Spain, people in the know who tend to think that they might be on the crest of just blowing up a little bit. Maybe the fatigue of the, because it's a smaller squad and they've outperformed everyone's expectations this season. Maybe the longer the season goes on, the more they'll tire. Man United at 40, it's half the odds for a place in the final, but I mean, Jim, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same thing before the Olympiacos first leg and thinking this is a tournament for them. And then they were as bad then as they have been all season.
No.
I mean, how many chances do we give them? That's the thing, isn't it?
I know what you mean. I've been there on a few of those European nights, and Old Trafford is an absolutely, you know, special electric atmosphere. If they can,
it's hard to drop that idea, isn't it? That they will do it at some point this season. We've seen it every season, haven't we?
Exactly. Yeah, Lee. You know, I mean, you're right. Every season they kind of, you know, pull it out of the bag. Is it just the belief that's, is it just the belief that maybe is not there? And you know, that's a key thing in football, isn't it? You know, the confidence issue, because you know there used to be a time when teams came to Old Trafford and they were kind of beaten before they got off the bus, weren't they? But you know, maybe now they're looking at it and thinking, well, if we need to get a point, we can go there and nick one. But look, let's be positive. An early goal, for United, and that changes the whole dynamic of the tie. And Olympiacos, a fantastic result, but you know, they aren't, you know, Greek football is not in a brilliant place at the moment. And you know, you just think if Manchester United get up ahead of steam, you know, 1-0 going into half time, they're still very much in the game. And as I said, you know, then that sort of can act as a springboard, hopefully, going forward for the semi, for the quarterfinals and onward.
Let's have a chat about Alan Pardew. He's been punished this week for the headbutt. However serious you think the headbutt was, he's been punished by being given a 7-game ban, a £60,000 fine. Now he's got a full stadium ban for the next 3 games, and then for the following 4, he's got a touchline ban. This stadium ban's a new thing. It's interesting. I mean, it's almost like they've waited so long, Jim, to implement this stadium ban that technology has already gone past them. You know, he could technically deliver a team talk via Skype if he had more luck than us with Skype this morning. I don't think he will do that, because that would really be pushing it. The good thing for Newcastle is while he's not there, he can deliver. You know, he can deliver his, you know, his team talk in the hotel. But while he's not there, they've got a nice, calm John Carver to manage them in his absence, because he doesn't fly off the handle either.
No, I mean, what we're looking at. So we've got Fulham this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, Crystal Palace, Newcastle. So then they got the Manchester United game. You know, I think we might be back for that.
In the stadium at least.
For that one. But I think Newcastle's position, it's probably been aided somewhat by the fact that, you know, that they possibly still have an outside chance of, you know, if they can put a strong run together to, you know, maybe challenge for a top six finish. But they're not in any real danger of being sucked into the, you know, the relegation battle. I mean, 43 points now, okay, I'm going to say it, they're not going to go down. There you go, I've said it. So if any punters now do, you know, come back and say, well, you said they didn't go back down, but there we go, that'd be a surprise, wouldn't it? So that kind of position has taken the pressure off, you know, a little bit. Will Alan Pardew, you know, will they try and smuggle him in the laundry basket? You know, probably, maybe, as you said, that, you know, technology now, we don't need that. But the bottom line is, you know, you cannot be doing that, can you?
Is the ban severe enough? It's the most severe ban that's been handed down. I mean, you look at some of the kind of comparisons, I guess. Mm. You know, Paul Ince, he got a 5-game stadium ban for verbally abusing and threatening match officials in September. So, he's got 2 more for, which was, you know, I know there's debate over how serious a violent, you know, assault it was. If you're in the street, Jim, and you get into an altercation with someone and you put your head towards someone in a threatening manner, but you don't really make too much contact, that's vastly different to actually planting one on someone. So, you know, there's debate over that, but, you know, you can't have managers doing this, having this, exhibiting this kind of behaviour. Is it strong enough? Should he have been banned from stadiums until the end of the season?
I mean, Chris Davies, you probably know from the fellow FWA committee member. He's been, you know, very, very, very strong on this and saying, you know, this is not a harsh enough, you know, stance from the FA. And it, you know, I just think sometimes you have to look at it and say, well, what sort of example are we setting, regardless of, you know, intent and, you know, did he plant, you know, how strong a headbutt was it?
Yeah.
You know, managers should not be doing this.
No.
You know, if someone did that in any other environment, you know, it would probably lead to a police prosecution. We live in this bubble in football, don't we, where you know, the normal sort of rules of society don't seem to apply.
Well, you'd lose your job, but I'd lose my job. You'd lose your job if you did that to a work colleague.
Exactly. I mean,
or even if you did it to someone who was visiting your work premises, even.
Yeah.
Let's put it into that context. That's what it is.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and Alan Pardew has not, you know, he just not seemed to have learned from his lessons. No, he had the square up with Arsene Wenger when he was at, you know, when he was at West Ham. You know, he pushed over the referee, didn't he?
Mm.
You know, I mean, and that was a two-match ban, and then, you know, £20,000 fine. I mean, these fines, you know, these guys are, you know, incredibly wealthy, you know, managers and players now. You know, it's not going to make any difference. And, you know, he used expletives against a fellow manager. I mean, you know, come on, as you say, you know, the FA could have well been in the right to say, you know what, this is completely out of order and I'm sorry, you are not going to be on that touchline for the rest of the season. You know, you could even say, look, you know, I'm going to take you completely away. The only managing you can do is of your club in the, you know, in the training ground.
Yeah.
You know, and Alan has kind of, you know, said, I'll, you know, take a look at myself and calm down and you know, strap myself into my seat. But this kind of thing just cannot happen. I mean, finding someone and warning them, saying, if you do it again, well no, say, look, you've crossed over the line, this is it now, you're not going to be involved in any coaching for the whole season, you know, for the rest of the season. But as you say, Newcastle could have well been within their rights to say, I'm sorry, you brought the club's name into disrepute, this is not acceptable, and you know, and we're going to get out of that eight-year contract straight away now. But his team is producing, you know, results on the pitch with all of the issues that they've had, and, you know, selling, you know, key men and not being able to get other people in. But, you know, Newcastle are set for another, you know, another top eight finish, which, you know, is in the Premier League is a very credible achievement. And, you know, unfortunately now, Alan Pardew's off-field issues are going to overshadow what has been a half-decent season on it.
Yeah, Newcastle, of course, fined him £100,000 as well. So £160,000 he's been heavily fined, I guess, over the course of the Newcastle and the FA dishing out their punishment. I've got a theory on Newcastle that after the experience of the Europa League, They hampered them so badly last year. It was just a canny, clever way of getting him out of the way. So the performance drops a little bit, and they've got no chance of qualifying for Europa League. Simple. The ninth Premier League manager to go. If I mean, he looks like he survived the sack, but you never know. If anything else happens, then he's 16-1 to be the ninth Premier League manager to leave. Pepe Mel still the odds-on favourite, 2-1 on Chris Hughton, 4-1. No manager to leave before the end of the season is 9-2, and Tim Sherwood 11-1. I think Tim Sherwood's probably safe until the end of the season and after the World Cup when Louis van Gaal becomes available. Let's have a look at the Premier League weekend, Jim. The TV games, Hull versus Manchester City, so City straight back into it from the New Camp to East Yorkshire. The TV game on Saturday evening is Aston Villa versus Chelsea, so Chelsea with an away trip before their Champions League exertions. And then Sunday looks fantastic, Manchester United versus Liverpool. What a way to warm up for that Champions League game for Manchester United. And Liverpool, of course, still gunning for the title now, let alone fourth spot. Tottenham v Arsenal as well at 4 o'clock, so two great derbies on Sunday. I guess you'll be at White Hart Lane, will you?
Yes, I'm heading along there on Sunday, you know, which is another key fixture in this run for Arsenal. I know they have that game in hand, don't they, over Chelsea? But you know, by the time you know, Chelsea kick off, I think it's going to be, you know, sort of 12, you know, points behind it. You know, they need a win, don't they? You know, I think at this stage of the season, for anyone at either end of the table, draws are going to kill you. So we can see how Liverpool have resurged their title challenge, and you're absolutely right, they are in the mix. No matter what, you know, what anybody says, they have that, you know, that game in hand, and they have fixtures against the sides around them. So
yeah,
you know, Liverpool could still have a very big say in this. Obviously, Manchester City sitting down in fourth now with those games in hand. They are against some of the lower sides in the league, so you would expect that to tighten up right again. But you know, Chelsea just keep plodding along. You know, they had that, you know, that that result against Everton, which was a really, really big result for them a couple of weeks ago, and then absolutely tore Tottenham apart, didn't they, to make the full use of no one else playing. So yeah, I would expect them to beat Aston Villa, although probably Aston Villa sounded a bit of a warning from their last home game, didn't they? When they, you know, went behind to Norwich and then came out with that blistering run. So, you know, Aston Villa are very much Jekyll and Hyde side this season. So, you know, I don't know what the odds are for a draw there, but you know, that might, there might be sort of some value in that one. But
yeah, 3-1 the draw between Villa and Chelsea. 3-1.
Yeah, that's not.
That's a bit bigger than normal as well.
Yeah, that's probably not bad. I mean, I'm always interested in the odds when you see these the teams against the top six, you know, sort of sides going away from home, when there can be so odds-on favourites, can't there? And I think sometimes, you know, the draw does offer a value. I mean, I was at Norwich Manchester City earlier this season, and I think the 0-0 was something like 9-1 or something, which you know, would not have been a bad punt, but obviously, you know, one that many people would have looked at. We've got Manchester United against Liverpool, always a feisty fixture, isn't it? You know, one of those that...
Could be intriguing to see what Moyes does here, isn't it? Because, you know, he's obviously got... He needs some confidence going into that Olympiacos game. And the way Liverpool play on the break, I mean, how does Moyes approach this with brittle confidence? I mean, if Liverpool get an early goal, this could be anything, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Liverpool look frightening, don't they?
Yeah.
Away from Anfield or at Anfield with their front three. But as you said, I think, you know, the first goal, could be key in that one. And it's another one we talked about with Manchester United against Olympiacos. You just feel that at some stage that performance has got to come. I mean, with Tottenham's defeat the other week, Manchester United can really close the gap, up on Spurs again, and you know, put the pressure on, and also put some distance between themselves and Everton to closing on that fifth place now. Has top four gone for them? I would think probably now the top four in as it is, probably not in that order, but I would think those four are now going to battle it out for those, probably even for the title between those four, which would be great, wouldn't it, over the last 10 games to actually sort of go in with 3-4 games to go with you know, three sides who can actually go and win the title. But the odds there on Manchester United on the home win, are they fairly generous, or are people fancying Liverpool this weekend?
Yeah, the odds are 6-4 for Manchester United, 11-5 the draw, and 15-8 for Liverpool. So the draw is the biggest, then Liverpool, then Man United favourites. I'm not sure many people. I think that 15-8 on Liverpool, people might be tempted.
Yeah, that looks. You know, I mean, that's. That's probably the value bet of the three again, but I suppose it just depends what Manchester United turn up, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know, and as you said, whether they're able to keep.
There's no way they can go hammer and tongs at it with Liverpool at the moment, is there? There's no way they can suddenly find the form to go, you know, go toe-to-toe with them. They'll have to play some level of kind of restrictive game against this Liverpool side.
Yeah,
it would be suicidal to go at them, wouldn't it? You would think.
Well, I don't know. I suppose if you go to Liverpool, what they did to Arsenal in the first sort of 20 minutes, at Anfield, you know, you can kind of, you know, kill the game. But I don't think this Manchester United side are looking at doing that, are they? As you said, it's coming. You think it's going to be more of a, you know, sort of Cajun Canada.
Maybe that draw then at the bigger price, 11-5.
Yeah, maybe that might be worth the value. But as you say, they could have one eye on that Olympiacos game. And you know, is that a bigger fixture now? You know, now for them, but they won't want to lose, you know, sort of any more ground, and they won't want to, you know, see Everton get a result against Cardiff, which they probably will do, and then all of a sudden they're back down to seventh again.
Yeah. If I had to pin you down and ask you for a bet of the week, Jim, which game would you be looking at? What do you fancy?
Norwich winning 3-0 at Southampton. I'll take that.
Yes.
I can't really see that one. I think. I think maybe that draw bet for Aston Villa looks quite a good value if you get the Aston Villa that turned up, you know, recently against Norwich. Don't forget as well, Villa have had a break, haven't they? Because they didn't play Manchester City.
Yeah.
So you know, they will have had as much time to work on this, you know, as Chelsea will have done. So, you know, that's probably not a bad value bet. Now saying that, Chelsea are going running about six.
Always the way.
Yeah, and it'll be all over. But
and just in case anyone, you know, now you've said it, anyone wants to back Norwich to win 3-0 at Southampton, it's 80-1.
Is it.
You know, it's one of those things. You'll see they'll go two up, and you'll be like, "Ah,
Ricky Van Wolfswinkel hat trick." That'll
yeah.
do me. Yeah,
that's a Ricky Van Wolfswinkel hat trick and Norwich to win 3-0 is 8 million to 1.
There we go. Well,
no, it's not. I've quoted that off the top of my head. Please do not. You know, please.
I have a pound on the nose. I think after his bless him, his form this season, I don't think.
No,
don't
think probably not.
But I mean that the battle at the bottom end of the table. Just touch on that quickly. Is just as tight.
Crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, it's going on the other end. I mean, I think, you know, unfortunately, as much as I enjoy going to Craven Cottage, I think Fulham have got a really, really big ask to get out there now, you know, even with McGatt in change, but in charge. But West Brom, I mean, I think they, I just think they look very vulnerable there, don't they?
Level on point to Cardiff now as well.
Yeah, Peck Mill, very short odds to be the next manager out the door. So, you know, but that's going to be good. I don't think anybody knows how many points sort of will take it now. I mean, really, probably anybody from you know, maybe West Ham, Aston Villa, Stoke, maybe not quite out of it yet, could even be dragged into that one. So that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out over the last few games of the season.
Yeah, there's a bit of a gap. I mean, it was very tight before. A little bit of a gap's appeared now, hasn't it? I mean, six points between Cardiff and that group that you just mentioned, Stoke, Villa, West Ham.
Yeah,
this time of the season.
That might just be enough.
Yeah.
I think what's happening is you're getting the top sort of four, you know, five, six teams, maybe a sort of, you know, not dropping points against the lower teams, and the lower teams are sort of taking points off each other. So, you know, you're thinking this season maybe even 37 might even do it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, Crystal Palace have had a bit of a jump with their change of manager, but I mean, you know, they're still only sort of 2 points away. Norwich for Swansea as well. You know, I mean,
yeah, Swansea,
you know,
West Brom this weekend as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, what's all the odds of Swansea to be dragged back into it?
Well, this weekend, I was just going to do the match odds, 10-11. They're odds on to beat West Brom at 3-1. But when you start looking at the relegation prices, Swansea 12-1 to be relegated. Which, I mean, like you say, you know, you would never be surprised if they went on a bad run at a crucial time. That, you know, a lot of people saying, a bit like Fulham, haven't really got the fighters in the side to do it. It's good. Yeah, that relegation picture is going to be intriguing. But Fulham instantly 1-6 now, 6-1 on to go down. Cardiff 2-5. Palace 6-4, Sunderland 13-8, West Brom 2-1, Norwich 9-4. Then you get the bigger prices. Hull and Swansea both 12s. Villa, Stoke and West Ham are all 16-1. Jim, thanks very much for your time. It's been really, really good talking
Pleasure.
To you. Jim Van Wyk from the Press Association, also National Committee Member for the FWA. You can listen to this podcast at the FWA's website, footballwriters.co.uk. Have a look around that as well. WilliamHill.com/podcast is also where they live. Also find it on Audioboo and on iTunes. If you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed today, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.